Oh boy. Oh boy. We have a problem now. Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers. We have a problem now. Yep. This is the only franchise I've ever observed, watched, followed, where even winning is a problem. And that's what's happening now. First of all, how are you? You good?
I am good.
You look wonderful, resplendent in your Penn State shirt. We have a Penn State guy here. We have a West Virginia guy here. Well, luckily, we have a Pitt guy, too, in Doran Dickerson.
Got all our bases covered.
Balances things out. Penn State going to be any good this year?
That's
they going to win the national title? Is Drew Aller going to be the Steelers' next quarterback?
I'm not as high on him.
It's going to be Arch Manning. What?
I'm not as high on Drew Aller to this point as City Limits is. I got to see him do it on the field.
So do I, and I'm with you there. Well, I'm glad to know that everything is well. Bob will be back next week. And in the meantime, yes, we have a problem. The Pirates are winning. And I'll tell you why that's a problem. They've won four in a row. They've won 7 of 8. And if they win today, it's a little bit of a tough matchup, Burrows against Logan Webb. But if they win today, they're 35-36 under Don Kelly. They're essentially 500. They're playing really well. Tommy Pham is suddenly, you know, Mickey Mantle at the plate. He's been the hottest hitter in the league now. And I'll tell you what the problem is, and I'll tell you in the form of Ken Rosenthal talking about Ben Cherington. I hadn't been thinking so much of this side of it with the trade deadline, what, a little more than about 32 hours away, somewhere around there, 6 p.m. tomorrow. And this is a gigantic trade deadline for the Pirates as far as 2026 goes, maybe as far as Ben Cherington's future goes. And that's really what I want to talk about right now, is Ben Cherington, maybe the worst general manager in the history of Pittsburgh sports. He may have made one trade. He's made a couple of good draft picks, but scores of horrendous ones. There's been no drafting and developing of hitters. There isn't one Ben Cherington hitter who was developed here who's here and playing. Maybe Nick Gonzalez, I guess, but is he a high impact hitter right now? I don't think so, Sean. But here's what I'm getting at. I've been thinking of this from one side. Like, if I'm Cherington, it's time to take a big swing or two, because what do I have to lose? I may be on the hot seat anyway. Well, what if it's the other way around? And that's where this Rosenthal clip comes in. And I think this was from Foul Territory TV, okay? And this is the part about the question is how Bob Nutting will evaluate Cherington's performance. Would you like me to read that, or do we have that exact clip, Sean?
I think Ken picks up talking about the problem if they keep Keller and Bednar and
yes,
the financial implications either way.
Let's hear it.
The problem with keeping them is you're not going to spend money. We know they're not going to spend money because they're the Pittsburgh Pirates. So if you have any chance to get impact offensive talent back in return for these guys, Keller in particular, with the years of control he has, in my mind, you have to do it. But they know the value of those players to their own organization. You can envision a world, if you were spending money perhaps, where you were building around those guys. I just don't see that world existing for the Pirates. It seems to me that they have to move Keller and Bednar. And I understand where they are, and I understand the difficulty of Ben Cherington's position. He's under fire. He has his job in question for next year. But in this situation, GMs generally do what is best for the organization. What is best for the organization right now is to trade those guys, both of them, Bednar and Keller, and get as much as you can offensively back.
I agree with that. I don't necessarily agree that GMs in this position have that altruistic mindset of I'm going to do best for the organization here. I mean, I just think from the human side of it, I need to do what's best for me. And here's the problem. Here's the crux of it. Rosenthal is clearly right that selling off Bednar or trading Bednar and Keller is the right thing to do here. They have a surplus of pitching. Both of those guys have been up and down in their careers, and they're way up right at this particular moment, Keller's last start notwithstanding. And the time to trade them for what they don't have, which is bats, is now. Like right now. The problem is Charrington's job security, and again, I hadn't thought of it this way. They're winning. They're playing well. They've, by and large, been a pretty decent watch under Don Kelly. With a few series, you know, the White Sox one tops the list. Exceptions to that, but again, they're right around 500 under Kelly. So from Charrington's perspective, he may be thinking, and I wouldn't blame him for at least thinking this, we got to keep winning to save my job. And the best way to keep winning right now is to keep Bednar, keep Keller, even keep a guy like Tommy Pham, who's been on fire right now. That's what worries me. Even winning worries me with this franchise. Because it'll be very easy for Charrington to walk down the hallway and tell Bob Nutting, you know what? We're just not getting the kind of offers that I think make it worthwhile here. And the way he talked about Bednar the other day, like he was the man who had saved the city from certain destruction and was a pretty good closer on top of that, just has me thinking, and also people like Noah Hyles reporting that suddenly they may not trade Keller. In fact, it seems unlikely, according to Hyles. Oh, my God. Are they going to keep these guys and even a guy like Tommy Pham? Because Charrington wants to save his job, and the surest way to do that would be to stay right around 500 down the stretch so you can report back to your boss and say, look what we did. You know, let's just go out and make a couple moves around what's already pretty much a 500 team under Don Kelly, and let's go here. Problem is, where are you going to get bats? Where are you going to get bats then? You going to buy them? Because you still have Keller's salary then at that point. Where are you going to get bats would be my question. Because you're not going to get far over 500, if at all, unless you supplement this pitching with more hitting. And I don't trust Ben Charrington to do anything. I don't even trust him to do the right thing at this deadline. I have said I think the Pirates are closer than others do. But it's so close and yet so far away. They're like, I think, one or two high-impact bats from at least being in contention for a wild card. It's hard not to be. But where do you get them? Where do you get them? So I'm highly concerned right now, Sean, that Charrington's mindset might be quietly, this is going pretty well right now. 7 of 8, 4 in a row, 500 basically under our manager. If we keep doing this, how can they fire me? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I just think that anyone who truly looks closely and isn't just reacting based on a record over an arbitrary period of time would not say that this team is well positioned to contend in future seasons with the roster that they have. And to your point, they're not going to have significant additions via free agency. Certainly not significant additions to the lineup. Maybe you can find a relief pitcher fairly affordable that can make an impact. You're not going to get the type of bats that they need in the free agency market unless to completely do a 180 in terms of their financial
approach. Yeah, and as Rosenthal says, you can envision a world where if you were spending money, perhaps you build around those guys, but I just don't see that world existing. Neither do I. You know, you get lucky once in a while, and it's great that Tommy Pham is hitting and has been for a good month and a half or so. Okay, he helped to bury this team. He was god-awful. It really doesn't matter, other than maybe you get a little better of a prospect if you trade him right now. So I guess, is that an argument for keeping him? I don't know. At least you get a lottery ticket prospect for him. But it doesn't matter what he's doing now. That was a bad signing. I won't even mention Adam Frazier and Spencer Horwitz was their big, that was their big move. So here's the other thing that Rosenthal said, and it's kind of what I'm saying here. And I quote, the question is how owner Bob Nutting will evaluate Charrington's performance at the deadline and beyond. If Nutting judges Charrington partly on how the Pirates finish, a sell-off involving Bednar, Kellers, and others would make the team even less competitive, damaging the GM standing. Bingo! That's what I'm saying here. That's exactly what I'm saying. In fact, that's why I said it. Is that Rosenthal's quote sort of had me turning my, is it a globe you look into? What do you look into to evaluate something? Not a Rubik's Cube.
No, I don't think you look into that. You no. try to solve that.
Yeah. And I never could. A kid named Dan, I was going to say Kingerski, but he covers the Penguins. Dan Zembrowski at Amherst Junior High.
Not Dan Zangrilli.
No. Well, maybe him. Could do that in like a second. It was unbelievable. And I would spend a day and still couldn't do it. Could you do one? A Rubik's Cube, Sean?
No. Although I've never really tried for more than a few minutes.
We should have a competition.
I want to say that when the Pirates were in Seattle, there was a national competition in Seattle to solve the Rubik's Cubes.
Well, this is a Rubik's Cube of its own here. And then the second part of Rosenthal's statement was, however, if Charrington takes a passive approach, declining to leverage his ample supply of pitchers to acquire impact hitters, Nutting could fire him for a different reason, failing to put the team in a better position for 26. Boy, that makes it sound like Charrington's and damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? So if I'm in that, where I'm screwed either way, I might bet on let's just keep winning and call his bluff. Don Kelly might save Ben Charrington's job. Are you aware of that? That could very well happen here.
Don Kelly's performance should earn him additional seasons. They should keep him at the as a manager if they have a strong finish this
season. Well, I know, but the last time I said that was before I went on my first of 10 vacations, and they wind up, I come back, I have to apologize to Limits and his whole family because I told Limits that I guaranteed Kelly would be back, and then when I returned, it was on the heels of the White Sox series. But I tend to agree with you. Right now, that's the way it looks. So if you were Charrington out there at 412-928-9370, 928-9370. And you were sitting home alone without the altruistic thoughts of, oh, I'm going to do what's best for this organization, whether I'm here or not. Come on. Dave Littlefield went out and signed. Who was the guy Dave Littlefield signed for that gigantic contract right before he left? Do you remember that? It was a horrifying picture. And it was basically Dave Littlefield giving a middle finger on his way out. Matt somebody. I don't remember. Do you, Sean? Littlefield made this horrific signing of a high-priced pitcher, like something the Pirates would never, ever do. Basically on his way out as, here, take this. This is what I couldn't do my whole time here. I just don't believe.
You're not talking Matt Morris, are you? Is that,
was it Matt Morris?
I thought,
is that
they,
who it
I
was?
I thought they traded him, but maybe they re-upped
no,
him.
No, it was somebody. Maybe they traded for a guy with a big, big contract. Whoever it was here. Eat this on my way out, that type of thing. I'm not sure that people in general think that altruistically of the organizations that they're working for. People think about themselves. So if you were Charrington, what do you think is the best way to preserve your job? I guess it's to follow Nutting's orders. Is Nutting giving him orders? That's my other question. Or is he just letting him independently run things into the ground? Does Nutting go to him and say, listen, we're looking toward next year, make deals? And in that case, you make the deals and you've done what your GM or what your owner ordered. And then you have, you know, an excuse down the stretch. You're not tied to your record down the stretch if you were simply following orders. I mean, that should be obvious. Listen, we went out, we traded Keller, Bednar, Pham, and others, and we're positioning ourselves for next season, either with real players, with AAA prospects who are knocking on the door, maybe blocked right now. I guess that's what you do. But my question is Bob Nutting ordering that? I don't know. Or is he just letting Charrington make his own decisions? And then if you're Ben, what do you do here? What do you do? Is it best to stand pat and win insofar as the Pirates win, which is right around 500? 412-928-9370 off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. He should have fired him. He should have fired him with Derek Shelton and brought in somebody else to run the draft and orchestrate this trade deadline and your off season.
That's what Washington did, manager and GM simultaneously.
And did the next guy make the Juan Soto trade, or who made that trade?
No, I'm saying this was this season they did that.
And oh, yeah, they did it this season.
It was right before the draft, and they weren't too worried because we all know the GM has some say in it, but it's generally the scouts who do stuff like that. So I agree it made no sense to do one and then maybe just delay the inevitable with the other, which is the GM.
Well, that's the thing. Why would you want dead man walking to be running your organization? I mean, this again goes back to the boss here of having this almost untenable and ridiculous situation of a guy who may be fighting for his livelihood amidst trying to do what's best for his organization. Those two things don't always jibe. You know what I mean? And in this situation, they may be on opposite ends. That's the problem. Meanwhile, and by the way, I think Ben Charrington may very well be the worst general manager in the history of Pittsburgh sports. I don't think that that's an overstatement. I did an entire study on this, I don't know, back in June or no, May it was. And there have been 44 general managers, Sean, over 201 seasons of Pittsburgh sports, going back to 1882, the year Ron broke into the business. I don't know if you have a Ron clip to spice things up. And I could make a case that Charrington is the worst. I really could. This is year six of the rebuild. I think he's made one good trade. And there's not a single Charrington developed good player, like high impact player, in the lineup. And no, I don't include Alexander Canario. And you can just look at it. Just look at the numbers compared to all the other GMs that have served around here forever. Look at the lineup, for God's sakes. Hank Davis is still flailing away here. Jack Sawinski is back. Key Brian Hayes is still there. I think, did he bat fifth again last night? I don't know. Some of the other worst GMs, believe it or not, one was Dan Rooney, who went 6-22 as Steelers GM, but I think he kind of made up for that, right? That's too short a tenure to include him here. That was 1969 and 70, and he also hired Chuck Knoll. This guy hired Derek Shelton, for God's sakes. So I'm going to let Dan Rooney certainly off the hook there. Jack Riley, in his first run as Penguins general manager, had only a .403 winning percentage. Charrington is somewhere probably around .420 right now. He was .411 at the time of this story. But even Jack Riley, that was an expansion team, for God's sake. So that lets him off the hook. And the only other GM who's around there that I could find was Eddie Johnston, who had a .400 winning percentage from 1983 to 88 as the Penguins general manager. But he was basically throwing games one of those years and happened to come up with Mario Lemieux. So I'm going to let him off the hook too. He's a hero. Charrington is a goat in the worst sense of that word. He's absolutely butchered this rebuild. Now, the chief, Art Rooney, was also a GM at one point, and it didn't go well. But it was only 3 years early in his tenure, and they didn't even have, when they had the draft then, they would have it in a hotel ballroom, a smoke-filled hotel ballroom, and this is true too, because I went back and researched this for a story once. They would sit next to sports writers at the draft. The chief, he'd like turn to I don't know, well, Ron was there, 1933, and say, Ron, who should we pick? That actually happened, Sean. I did a story on the Steelers' first ever draft pick, believe it or not, named William Shakespeare. And so I went back and researched what the draft was like. And that particular draft, I think, was at the Ritz-Carlton in Philadelphia, smoke-filled again. They would read like Street and Smith's or whatever the magazine was of the time and just pick a guy who they knew wasn't going to play probably anyway because the NFL didn't pay back then. They would go work in factories instead to make some money. So I'm not holding the chief accountable for those first 3 years. Can you imagine if Omar Khan sat next to Gabali for the draft?
He'd be asleep probably.
You stole my line. I was just going to say that. Gabali would probably be asleep. He'd have to rustle him awake. And then on his left, he had the Baconian mongoose advising him on picks. That's what happened. So I'm letting the chief off the hook too. And then there's really very few other guys. One is Branch Rickey, one of the most famous general managers in the history of sports. He signed Jackie Robinson and won 4 World Series early in his career. Signed Jackie Robinson, of course, when he ran the Dodgers, won 4 World Series with the Cardinals. And then his last stop, as with so many others, from Branch Rickey to Jeremy Burnitz to whoever else, his last stop was Pittsburgh, where he posted a 349 winning percentage from 51 to 55. Now, that's significantly worse. But you know where he beats Charrington?
Did he get Roberto?
Like everybody else does? Well, he built the core of the 1960 world champion Pirates by bringing in, yes, Roberto Clemente, Dick Groat, Bill Mazeroski, Elroy Face, Vern Law, all those guys. He also delivered one of the great lines in sports history, I might add, with Ralph Kiner when they lost 1 million games and Kiner wanted a pay raise. And Rickey told him, and I quote, "Son, we could have finished last without you." And off went Ralph Kiner.
Do you think they're going to say that same thing to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa?
I don't know. I do know that. I do know. He predicted they would win 100 games this year. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I like the confidence, but it seemed a little
he's only going to be he's only going to be 30 or so off. Not a bad prediction. So what do you do if you're Charrington? What will Charrington do? What orders is he under? If I were giving him orders, it would be, Ben, you better damn well go out and find us some bats. And that brings us to the trade deadline tomorrow at 6. And sort of the themes developing here right now are, A, that it's a slow-moving market. The teams that have coveted players are holding out for big prices, and that would include Charrington. I was reading Jeff Passan and Buster Olney today had a nice piece on ESPN.com. Relief pitchers, as we know, are wanted, coveted at this deadline. Phillies, Blue Jays, Rangers, Tigers, both New York teams, Dodgers, desperately want relief pitching. Teams always want starting pitching. You know, for obvious reasons, right? I mean, you get into a playoff series and you can have your own closer and then have David Bednar in the 8th and somebody else in the 7th. You're shutting down games in a short series. You have Mitch Keller giving you a decent start or two in a series for obvious reasons. And everybody thinks they can win, and maybe everybody can. It's baseball. It's often a crapshoot. We've seen the Royals win a World Series. We saw the Texas Rangers sort of drag themselves into the playoffs a couple years ago and then win it all.
By the way, Joe, did you hear that the Pirates have been linked with a Rangers hitter?
Who's that?
Adolis Garcia.
Yeah.
Who I don't think would be a logical fit whatsoever, although it would be tempting to, you know, potentially have the ability to bring in a guy who has some pretty significant power.
I'm starting to get more desperate at this point, which probably isn't a good thing. He only has 1 year of control, but 1 year with Skeens, 1 year in that window is enough for me. They've already smashed that window twice or tried to smash it. They've blown 2 years with Skeens. Now, Garcia is 32. 39 home runs a couple years ago, gone down to 25 and 14, but he's still a 2.5 WAR player, which means he's valued. And he does have 14 homers, which would look pretty good on this team. Some of the other guys out there, it seems like the Pirates are going to have to choose between these AAA guys that are maybe blocked in their organizations and players who can add something right now in this Skeens window who are proven. I'm not saying those other guys couldn't, because a guy like we've been talking about, Owen Casey for the Cubs, he walks right into your lineup. But we've never seen him in the majors before. Taylor Ward, 1 year left out in Anaheim. Good power hitter. Stephen Kwan, 2 years left in Cleveland. Not a power hitter, but a really good overall player. High on base. Yandy Diaz, we've talked about him. I would go to get him in a second, depending on what Tampa Bay wants. And that's another theme of this deadline, is there are a lot of teams seemingly, you know, in purgatory right now. Are we contenders or are we not? Jaron Duran, we've talked about him. He has 3 years left. I'm starting to come over to your side. I'm getting desperate. I guess that's what the deadline does to you. The deadline's tomorrow. I'd take him. I'd take 3 years of Duran, just put him in my lineup, a professional hitter. Then you have multiple white hot AAA players right now. Guys that are just tearing it up, that I would be very intrigued by. Casey, we've talked about, from the Cubs. And he is just smashing home runs. I think he's had two multiple home run games recently. As it says, and this is Jim Callis from Baseball America, who I love and who's great at what he does. Casey was always projected for massive power, but he reached the upper minors without having learned to manifest it fully. Well, says Callis, he's manifesting it now. Having eclipsed last year's home run total in just 78 games, he's beating down the door to the majors in July, having already delivered three multi-homer games and a five-hit game. He's batting .364 with eight home runs this month. Unfortunately, he's been blocked twice over with the Cubs, who are stacked at that position, outfield, DH, whatever you want to say. Go get him. Take that chance. I would take that chance. There's a number of other guys. We mentioned Spencer Jones, who suddenly has taken off. He dropped out of the top 100 before the season, but now this 6'7 monster, he's got 10 homers in his last 18 games in AAA. Lucky streak, short streak, misleading streak. I don't know. He has 16 home runs in 31 games and is hitting .403. I'm willing to take a chance, and there are other guys they've been linked to. Because here's the Pirates' other dilemma, well, one of 100. Another dilemma they have right now, they don't have a catcher. Somehow they don't have a catcher.
If only they had drafted one first overall.
Yeah.
That would have solved all those
problems.
Yeah,
that would have solved a lot of problems. Which brings us to this Henry Ford character out in Seattle, who's been blocked by the big dumper. He's apparently available.
I'd have a little
Harry
intel.
Ford. Did I say Henry?
Yes.
Henry is the guy who invented the car, yes. Basically, right?
Model T. Yeah.
Maybe they should get him and model their organization after him. No, it's Harry Ford who's been blocked by the big dumper.
I don't know that he is going to stick at catcher, and that's the concern with him. Is he good enough defensively? He's a really good athlete. They've tried him in the outfield, but he's an advanced
hitter.
Can
he hit?
He's an advanced hitter,
Then get him. I cannot believe I'm sitting here, you know, 2 years ago, maybe a year, 2 years ago, I'll say, it seemed like they were stocked with catchers, and then they bring in Joey Bart, who was really good last season. And you're like, man, so they got Davis, maybe still, you know, a guy who will fulfill his potential. Andy Rodriguez, a guy who was their top prospect, I believe, before Skeens came in. And now Joey Bart, what a surplus at that important position. And now they have nobody. They don't have a catcher for the future. None. So that's where Harry, don't call me Henry Ford, comes in. And there's another guy, AAA guy in Seattle named Tyler Locklear, who's crushing the ball. You can find these guys all over. And I know Henry Davis crushes the ball at AAA too. I realize that that's the risk. But does that keep you from going after an Owen Casey? I mean, I get it. Like every sport, there's a lot of college football players who are great and not good in the pros. But then there are ones who are great in the pros. I mean, you have to make your decisions. You have to draft people. You have to trade for high-end AAA prospects who are knocking on the door. You can't just sit it out. I don't trust Ben Cherington to do a damn thing, but he's here. Somebody's got to do it. You can't just sit there. And the time right now is to make your trade. Do you like any of the names I mentioned out there at 928-9370? Yandy Diaz is my preference, a proven, consistent hitter at the major league level. Now, he's going to be 34 soon. I don't care. He has 2 years here of control, 2 years into the Skeens window. But my other choice would be Casey from the Cubs, and I would absolutely give up Keller to get him. Absolutely, I would.
I think they have the ability to kind of do both. They have enough assets if they want to move off of their top two relievers, off of Keller. Even I think Noah mentioned you trade a guy like Mike Burrows if you get an equivalent AAA hitter back.
Yeah.
I think they could get a proven MLB hitter like a Stephen Kwan or an Adolis Garcia, someone like that. Duran would be a big swing for the fences and still have enough to acquire a high-end minor league hitter, a double-A or triple-A guy who's
both
on the cusp.
I would highly advise doing both, trading every asset that's tradable right now. All right, Sean, 412-928-9370. Having said all that, I live in fear of what Ben Cherington might be thinking. And there's nothing like winning. There's nothing like winning. And it'll be very, very easy if they just stay around 500 under Don Kelly for Bob Nutting to say, see, we're on the right track again. Whereas the other side of it, even if Nutting has ordered Cherington to make big moves and bring in players for 26, AAA guys even if he does that, and even if Cherington is just following orders, if they totally implode down the stretch, then it gets tougher. Because of public reaction and things like that, it's just a bad look, if you win, 11 games in August and 13 or 10 in September. If you completely implode and fold down the stretch, the optics of the situation may force a move anyway. Listen, Ben Cherington has very much earned his place on a blazing hot seat, if indeed that's where he is. He should be. Any other executive in the history of sports with his resume would be. What's he going to do? What should he do? Let's talk about it. Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never... I'm picturing Cabali falling asleep at the draft right in between Omar and Mike, and they're both turning to him for advice. Like the chief
and
all the other people had to do. He'll join us today, by the way. How about that?
He's going to be wide awake.
The big boy at 11 o'clock. Starkey's card of the week next, too. At Edgar Snyder & Associates, they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Thinking about Ben Cherington here, going into the trade deadline, and like all of you, I'm wondering, is it better that this guy does nothing or something? If he does something, will it be disastrous? But he has to do something. Really. He has to trade Keller and Bednar and try to find bats. And he has to do it now because neither one of those guys, I don't think, will ever be at a higher stock than they are, better stock than they are right now. I truly believe that. And I wonder, in Cherington's position, what he's thinking. Should I take big swings? Is that best for me and my future? Or now that we're actually winning, we've won 7 of 8, we've won 4 in a row, and honestly, now over a long period of time under this manager, we're basically a 500 team. Does that guarantee me job security into the future? It's a real question that Ken Rosenthal posed and that really has altered my way of viewing this trade deadline. And I mentioned Dave Littlefield. and the situations are quite parallel. Littlefield was in year six at the trade deadline when he made what I still think, and yeah, I'm sure he had to get Bob Nutting's blessing to make the deal. I still think he knew he was done, and this was a single-fingered salute on his way out. He brings in Matt Morris, a struggling pitcher from the San Francisco Giants at the trade deadline, even though the Pirates were completely out of it. And his contract paid him $10 million that year and the next year, which was a fifth of the Pirates' payroll. He just made a desperation move or a take this on my way out and spend it move. Bob Smyzik with a legendary column from that day, July 31st, 2007. The lead goes like this. Don't call the Pirates cheap. Don't you dare. You can, however, continue to call them clueless. That's the way they did it in the old days, Sean. Don't call me Seth Meyers. And he talks about Matt Morris, how the Giants were desperate to get rid of him, a last place team like the Pirates at the time. And all they asked in return were Rajai Davis and a player to be named. And the Pirates were responsible for all $16 million left on that deal. A fifth of their payroll for a guy who had like a 4-5 ERA and had been over his previous eight starts, it was up around eight. Is that incredible or what? Dave Littlefield goes out with a bang there, I think.
I looked at what he did in Pittsburgh, he never played after.
He was horrified.
Yeah, after his time in Pittsburgh, that was it for his major
league
career.
I told you, this is the last stop saloon here, yes. The last chance saloon.
He was a negative 1.7 war over his, you know, whatever, season and a half or however long he was here.
Yeah.
So he was worse than a replacement level pitcher by two losses. You could have brought up any
Sean.
Jabroni.
They spent a fifth of their payroll on him. That was probably the most uncharacteristic move the Pirates have ever made under Nutting, and nobody can tell me it wasn't Littlefield with a little parting gift. This is what I've been dealing with. Here's the real kicker to that one. You know what it was?
Well, Davis turned out to be a pretty respectable hitter.
Rajai Davis went from being, a nothing Pirate. He played like, I don't know, 100 games here, if that. Not even close to that, actually. And then he winds up in Oakland in 2009 and hits .305 with 41 steals. Then the next year, he hits .284 with 50 steals. Oh, my God, the Pirates. So what does he do? Not Rajai Davis, but Ben Cherington. What does he do now? Is he desperate? And what exactly does desperation mean? Does it mean more of, I keep guys like Keller, Bednar, and even Pham, and we continue to be around 500, and Bob Nutting loves me then? Or is it, do I take these gigantic swings because my boss has hinted that I should or flat out told me I should? Or is it somewhere in between? 412-928-9370, Mark Cabali. Top of the hour, and man, do I have a lot of questions for him about Steeler camp. But in the meantime, let's hit the phones, Sean, shall we?
We shall. We'll go down to Florida with Mark from Fort Lauderdale.
What's up, Mark?
I want to say, it's a really frustrating situation for everybody because you watch Charrington, but John Parado said he signed to 2027. I have a lot of respect for John. And
is that what he said?
In Pittsburgh baseball now. So, I mean, I don't think Ben's on the way out of town. I based on what John said, and I have a lot of respect for him. He's been on the baseball for 35 years. Great writer in your town. But I think two possibilities for the Pirates that people are talking about. New York media has been talking this week a lot about Mitch Keller for Carson Benj, a first round pick last year at Oklahoma State by the Mets, who's doing very well in Double A Binghamton. Not an easy league to hit in the Eastern League. Those ballparks are big. And he might be a possibility. They're talking, And the other one I really hope doesn't happen, because anytime you trade with Dave Dombrowski, he just says he's famous for the Miguel Cabrera trade. Other than trading Randy Johnson for a rental, Mark Langston, he's just a horrific track record of dumping farm products, that prospects that are highly hyped. But some people in Philadelphia think the Pirates are going to trade Bednar for Justin Crawford.
Yeah, I saw Justin Crawford's profile on there. He's more of an old school get on base run type guy, isn't he, rather than a power guy?
He is. And his father, Carl Crawford, had a long career in the major leagues. He'll run through a wall for you, though, Justin Crawford. I've seen him play ball at a couple levels. And the one the Pirates have called about, but it doesn't seem Seattle's willing to move, is Colt Emerson, a kid that was the Ohio Gatorade Player of the Year. He's not good, grew up not too far from Pittsburgh in Ohio, and, you know, shortstop, but young, but he was a great ball player last year in Arizona.
Well, maybe they can convert him to third base. I appreciate the call. I mean, I hope they need a third baseman starting tomorrow.
They're not getting Colt Emerson, I could tell you that right now.
Well, that's fine, but they need a third baseman. Would you agree with that?
I think they need pretty much every position on the field at this point.
Here's what Parado wrote the other day. The headline is, "How many more mistakes can Ben Charrington survive?" That's the headline to his story from 6 days ago. I wasn't aware of this situation. Has this changed at all since then? Angel Cervantes, I believe, their second round pick.
Oh, he's going to UCLA.
Yeah. How could the Pirates not know that their second round pick would decline to sign a contract? How could Ben Charrington not know? How could Director of Amateur Scouting Jason Horowitz not know? Now, he said maybe this was a negotiating deploy, but no, it's July 28th signing deadline. It's passed. Wow.
Yeah, that does not happen a ton. It's pretty rare that you draft a guy that high and can't work out a deal.
Okay, now this is a story. Parado says, "What is certain is the number of texts I receive from people in the baseball world. They all wanted to know how the Pirates, an organization that says its only chance to win consistently is with strong scouting and player development, could whiff on the 50th pick. It's a dereliction of duty by both Charrington and Horowitz to not know there was a chance Cervantes would go to college." Oh my God. I don't see the part where he says he signed through 2027. That's the problem here. Either way, who cares? I mean, Nutting did move on from guys who were signed before at the end of the Cunnelly, Hurdle, Huntington regime. I just worry about what Charrington is thinking and wanting to do in his private moments when he looks at his future, when he's sitting there by himself thinking about his future. Maybe I should just keep guys and keep winning. They are winning right now. They're basically even under Kelly. Next.
We will go Greg in Youngstown.
Hey, Greg. I don't hear Greg. Do you?
Greg?
Something's gone horribly wrong. Who's next?
We'll see if Herman and Shaler can get
through. I love the name Herman. Hello, Herman. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for the compliment.
Sure.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Guys, I hope that this is like a bluff tactic or something, but I don't know how you could keep Mitch Keller. I mean, the guy does not perform well in the second half, and I love Mitch. I think he's a great guy. I like him for Pittsburgh. He's blue collar. Like, he works hard. That's great. But at the end of the day, he's at his highest value, Joe. Like you said, how can you not move on from him?
And teams are desperate, and not when I say desperate, teams are desperate to try to win the World Series. Like, they know that a guy like Keller can help them do that, or maybe they're deluding themselves, like you said, because he tends to crumble in the second half of seasons. His value will never, ever be higher. Forget all the other reasons and just go with this one. Every day he serves is another day into his contract, and he's signed for multiple more years at a very good price. Then you throw in he's pitched to this point this season as well as he ever has, and you have a player who should be highly coveted. Now, I don't know how many of these teams have done their research to know he has a lot of like six ERAs in August and September of the last 4 years, but whatever. This is the time. and it's the time with Bednar, not the off season, now. They should be rolling into the final couple months here after tomorrow with at least some answers on what their 26 lineup is going to look like, or at least some auditions, some lengthy auditions. And I'm not talking about Nick York and Ron's son, Billy Cook. Okay, no more of them. One more.
Okay, we will go to Jay in Columbus.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, guys. I don't know how this guy keeps his job if he doesn't go for broke and get the top-tier prospect from Chicago, Seattle, Stark, what you said. I mean, you got to go with the AAA guy. You got to get rid of Keller. You got to get rid of Bednar. And Charrington is not – he's unhirable if he doesn't go for broke. I mean, if he gets – Owen Casey are a stud, and they remain competitive the rest of the year. They could call up Bubba Chandler and plug and play with Oviedo or whoever.
Oviedo made another good start at AAA, which was highly encouraging,
yeah.
I thought.
If they even remain remotely competitive the rest of the way, and you get
I'm not sure.
Keller, Bednar,
sure.
He might stick around another year.
Yeah. But I'm not sure that, and I appreciate the call, I'm not sure that Oviedo can't go a long way toward replacing Keller, to be honest with you. You may think I'm crazy, Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers.
I would never think that.
But I think Oviedo was on a track where he could offer approximate stats. Let's wait and see what Keller's stats are by the end of the season, by the way. And I've mentioned Bailey Falter before. He had another good start yesterday. And I believe Bailey Falter, does he have a better ERA than Keller right now? No, it's 3.69 to 3.73. He's got a better whip. I mean, why don't we talk about Bailey Falter more? So you give me a rotation next year that starts out with Skeens, Chandler, Oviedo, Falter, another veteran, or a guy. I think Ashcraft is going to make a good starter, don't you?
Yes.
That kid is, he has a live arm and an idea of how to pitch.
And Jared Jones at some point is going to.